Hi, welcome to Module 6, Pushdown Automata. Pushdown automata are the analog to context-free grammars, the same way finite automata are the analog to regular expressions and actually regular grammars. So looking at the slides on page 181, they say that a pushdown automata, PDA, is essentially a non-deterministic finite automata with epsilon transitions, but with the addition of a stack. So it's like a finite automata with a stack, but it's like a non-deterministic finite automata with a stack. So what happens on a transition with a PDA? Well, it can do a number of things. It might consume an input symbol. It always goes to a new state, which of course could be the old state. It might replace the top of the stack by any string of symbols, okay, which means that it might not replace the top of the stack. If it does replace the top of the stack, that's popping the stack, and then it may or may not push something onto the stack. At the same time, it may or may not consume an input symbol, so that's where the epsilon transitions come in. So they show a little picture here. The top part of this picture on page 181 would really be the same as what we'd have in a finite automaton, but now we're going to interact with the symbols that are on the stack, and you probably guessed that we're going to interact with the top symbol on the stack. So we'll have one more thing that we look at in our transitions. On page 182, they say, okay, let's take a look at that language of palindromes, okay, strings followed by the same string reversed with the alphabet 0, 1. So they have a very simple grammar there for that. P goes to 0, P0, P goes to 1, P1, P goes to epsilon, where P is the start symbol. Okay. Now, we can create a PDA, a pushdown automaton, for that language. By the way, we know we can't create a regular expression for that grammar. I invite you to try. There's just no way for a regular expression to remember what was done here. So, we're going to do one with three states. It says three states, but we know they mean three. And here's the way it's going to work. It's going to be non-deterministic. So it's going to say, okay, let's presume we're reading the front half of this string, the W part. And we're going to stay in state 0, and every time we read an input symbol, we're going to push it on the stack, because we're going to want to be able to pop it off in reverse order to recognize the string. Then we're going to have to step 2, we're going to have to guess that we're in the middle. Here's the non-determinism. And when we do guess that we're in the middle, basically it means there's going to be two transitions, one that won't work and one that will work. And then we're going to go to state 1, which will be a final state. So now we're going to start reading the rest of the input symbols and try to match them to the top of the stack. And as long as they match, we'll keep popping until we're out of input symbols, or if the stack is empty. If we are out of input symbols, it doesn't really matter whether the stack is empty or not, although in this case it will be, we will accept. So that's the general idea. Okay, so on slide 183, they have drawn this pictorially. So let me try to explain to you what these transitions mean. We have the three states, Q0, Q1, Q2. In the top state, it basically, the top line up, excuse me, above state Q0, where it says 0, Z0/0, Z0, we presume that there is a symbol Z0 on the bottom of the stack. So it says, that transition at the very top says, if we're in state Q0, that's because this is labeled on top of Q0, if we're in state Q0 and we read a 0 and we're at the bottom of the stack, we're going to push that 0 onto the top of the stack. So now the stack will have 0 on top and Z0 on the bottom. Let me read one more of these for you. Let's look above the Q1. Let's look at the first one on Q1. That one says, if the transition delta is delta Q1 0, 0, which means I'm in state Q1, reading a 0, and there's a 0 on the top of the stack. I'm going to stay in state Q1, and I'm not going to push anything onto the stack. The very fact that I read the 0 on top of the stack means it got popped. Oh, let's do another one. Let's look at the transition from Q0 to Q1, the top one there. I can spontaneously go to Q1 without reading any input, because that says, if you're in state Q0, without reading any input, that's the epsilon, if you're at the bottom of the stack, stay at the bottom of the stack, don't pop that bottom stack symbol, and go into state Q1. You know, I think that's if you have an empty input string. I'm going to read the next one. That's the epsilon 0/0. So if I'm in state Q0, without reading any input, if I have a 0 on the top of the stack, I will pop it, but then I will push it back on. That's the 0 after the slash. So we're going to see some more of these after we have some formal definitions. So here's the formal definition. Remember that a finite automaton was a 5-tuple. The PDAs we're looking at first here, yes, there's going to be a variation, is a 7-tuple. It has states, just like we had before. Sigma's the input alphabet, just like it was before. But now we have a new alphabet, and it's the alphabet of symbols that we're allowed to push on the stack. That's the stack alphabet. We're going to have transitions. They're going to be slightly different this time. We will have a start state Q0, and now we have the bottom of the stack, Z0. You know, in a lot of other literature, you'll see this written as a dollar sign, and I've seen even other symbols. And we're going to have a subset of the set of states, F, that a subset of the set of all states, which are the final states. Let's take a look where they define the transition function delta down below here. It says that it's a mapping, not from two things — we had a state and an input symbol for finite automata — but from three things: a state, an input symbol or epsilon, and a stack symbol. And this is really non-deterministic, because the fact that it goes into subsets of states with symbols that can be pushed on the stack, that's the Q cross R, the 2 to the Q cross R is subsets, means that we can have more than one transition for that input. So this is really non-deterministic. And again, Q0 is the start state and so forth. All right, so their example PDA there in 185, they've defined formally. There's three states, Q0, Q1, Q2. There's an input alphabet consisting of 0, 1. There's a stack alphabet consisting of 0, 1, and that Z0. There's a transition function, which will be defined below, a start state, a bottom of the stack symbol, and the only final state is Q2. Now, they've tried to write this, the transition functions, which frankly I think you can see better on the graph, they've written those into a table. So it says, if I'm in state Q0 and I have a 0 in the input and nothing except the Z0 on the stack, I stay in state Q0 and I push the 0 on top of the Z0 on the stack, and so forth. Very similar to what we just saw, just the table way of writing the graph. Okay, every other book I've ever seen in the world calls the stuff on page 186 configurations. They use the word configuration, but they also give another word. They call them instantaneous descriptions, and then they go on and they abbreviate this as ID. Think of them as configurations, okay? It's kind of the analog to sentential forms for grammars. It's the possible configurations we could have along the way when we start from a state Q0, reading input and popping and pushing on the stack. All right, so it says a PDA goes from configuration to configuration when consuming input. To reason about it, they use the term instantaneous description, an ID. Okay, so what it is, it's a configuration, but it's a triple. It consists of a state, it consists of the remaining input, and it consists of the current contents of the stack. So they define a PDA. It'll be a PDA. Is this the same PDA we had before? No, this is a formal definition. So they say that if I have a transition function delta QAX, and that goes to, that's the very first thing on the left there, P alpha. So P alpha is where I can go to in a transition delta QAX. That means that sometime along the way, I'll be in some state Q, A will be the next thing in the input, followed by some other stuff W, X will be on the top of the stack, possibly followed by some other stuff beta, and by applying that transition, I will go to state P, I will consume A, I will pop alpha, and off the stack. Is that true? P alpha goes to P. Oh, excuse me. I'll pop X off the stack, and I will push alpha onto the stack. Yeah, that makes a certain amount of stack. And then they do the reflexive transitive closure of that that allows us to do more than one step. So that's what we're seeing here. And then they're actually going to do a computation sequence on page 188. And here's where you'll really get to see the non-determinism in this. We're going to use an input string. I'm on page one, slide 188. We're going to use the input string 1111. So start out in state Q0, input string 1111, start symbol, the bottom of the stack has a Z0. Now there's two transitions. One will consume the input and push a 1 onto the stack. The other is the epsilon transition. It does not read anything from the input, and it doesn't push anything onto the stack. Let's look at that second one, the diagonal one, first, because that's going to lead us to a dead end. The next move here, the next transition from Q1 on a 1 with Z0 on the stack is to Q2 without consuming any input or doing anything to the stack. But after that, there's no transitions. So that's a dead end. Let's go back, and for the rest of the time that we look at this, we will go straight down, because these are the ones that are going to lead us to a final state. So, starting again, in state Q0, I'm going to read a 1, and I'm going to push that 1 on the stack. So the second configuration is Q0, 111, with a 1z0 on the stack. Now I apply the transition of Q0 to 1 with 1 on the stack, and that's the same transition, actually. That will consume a 1 from the input, push another 1 on the stack. And again, I'm going to ignore the incorrect, or the roots that don't get me anywhere. The next step is exactly the same. I read a 1, I push a 1 onto the stack. Okay, now I am going to spontaneously, I've got to do one more. Okay, so now I'm down at the configuration Q0, I'm out of input, epsilon, and there's 4 ones on the stack. Okay, now I'm going to spontaneously use that transition that takes me from Q0 to Q1 without doing anything else. Okay, it doesn't consume any input, well, there isn't any input, and it doesn't do anything to the stack. So now I'm in state Q1. All right, moving on to slide, and then it stopped. Did it stop right here? I took the wrong route. Yeah, I can't do anything. Let's see, what was the correct route? Let me go back. That's right, it was supposed to be WW reverse. So the third one down is where I had finally read. You probably were looking at this and laughing at me, right? The third configuration down is where I've done W, and there's a W reverse, really, WW. And that's the one where I have to do the spontaneous movement. And if I do that, you can follow it down, keeps going diagonal, and then it goes down vertically until we're out of input and the stack is empty. Now, in a few minutes, we're going to say that the condition for accepting is that we're in a final state and out of input. So it's those first two things we care about. For the first definition of acceptance, oh yes, there's going to be more than one, we don't care what's on the stack. Nevertheless, the stack is empty here. Okay, moving along to slide on page 189. They talk about how you'd end up in the exact same place if you added things onto the stack or added things onto the input. I am not too sure how important that is, so I'm going to move right along to slide 90. Slide 90 is the theorem that states exactly what they said in slide 189, and you can add stuff on the end and the configurations are the same. So let's keep going. Wonderful to... All right. Now, we're going to define what it means to accept a string. And it's going to be very similar to what we did with a finite automaton. We're going to accept by ending up in a final state. So, it says, given a PDA, and they list one, the language accepted by it, when we accept by final state, are all the strings such that you start in an initial state, looking at W, with a Z0 only on the stack, and in some number of steps, you get to some final state Q, and you're out of input. Notice there's an alpha there for the stack. We do not care if there's anything left in the stack for this definition. So, and then they tell us that the PDA on slide 183 accepts exactly the language WW reversed. All right, and they're going to prove that, and I'm not going to do that. You can read this if you want to read it. Okay. It's important. This was the language of palindromes, and to show that it's accepted by that machine, you have to show that if you have a palindrome, you can go from an initial state to a final state out of input, or if you go from an initial state to a and you've got to show the second part, if you go from an initial state to a final state running out of input, it had to have been a palindrome. Nevertheless, I'm going to move along with this. All right, now we're going to have another definition of acceptance, but don't worry about it, because it turns out these two definitions are equivalent in a way that you will have no difficulty understanding. So this time they're going to say that language of a DFA of the set of strings W, such that you start an initial state with W and Z0 on the stack, and you have two requirements. You have to be out of input, and the stack has to be empty. But you don't have to be in a final state. Okay? Oh, that's really interesting. And then they talk about how they would modify this, the one that we had, to accept by empty stack. And you're probably sitting there saying, yeah, I'm just going to add on another state and a transition from the final states that will empty the stack. And if you're saying that, you're correct. And we got a much better picture of that a little further on. It's going to take me a minute to find it. Okay, look at the graph on page 195. And this shows you that if you have, they're going to do it both ways. This basically shows you that if you accept by an empty stack, you could also accept by final state. So this is the reverse of what we just saw. But that inner oval is what we're starting with. We've got a state Q0, and we end up in some states with the input gone and the stack empty. And so we're going to accept that string. How could we accept that? How can we come up with a DFA that will accept the same strings by final state? Well, it's real simple. We're going to add a transition on that goes to a final state. That's the PF. The only problem is, how do we know that we can go to that final state? Because they've emptied the stack. So what we're going to do first is create a new start state, P0, and we're going to have a transition that's actually going to push our very own little special symbol, X0, underneath the old initial stack symbol Z0. So now when PN empties the stack, so to speak, there'll still be an X0 on the top of it. And when we see that, we just do a transition that goes to a final state. Okay, so if you accept by empty stack, you can accept by final state. Both times you've got to be out of input. All right, now we're going to do vice versa. Let's see if I can find that diagram. It's going to be after their tedious proof. Oh, let's get that with an example and all that jazz. And I'm moving along. I'll tell you where I am when I'm getting to slide 199 from final state to empty stack. But and there's the picture on page 199. This time, we assume that we have a PDA that accepts by final state. That's the middle oval. So we've got an initial state Q0, and it goes to maybe more than one final state. How can we have a similar PDA, an equivalent PDA, that will accept the same set of strings, but will do it by empty stack? Now realize, in order to get to the final state in the PF there, you had to have read all the input. Okay, so we're already out of input when we get to the final state. So all we're going to do is just add on some epsilon transitions, no matter what's on the stack, and pop the stack. So we're going to go to state P, and as long as we have stuff on the stack, we're going to pop it. All right? So that should be pretty easy. That'll even pop off anything that we put onto the beginning of there. I'm not even too sure why they put the X arrow onto the beginning. I don't think we really needed it. So that shows that if you have any PDA that accepts by final state, you can come up with a PDA that accepts by empty stack. Again, you gotta be out of input. So skipping over their little proof of all that, we should come to a statement that says that they are equivalent, and I guess I missed it. Let me go back. Okay, so on the top of page 200, we shouldn't have gone very far, they say that we want to show that the language accepted by, I think there's a typo there, that should be L of PN equals L of PF. So they want to say that any language accepted by empty stack can be accepted by final state. And of course, there's two parts to that. If something accepts by empty stack, you want to show that it accepts by final state. And it accepts by final state, it accepts by empty stack. And we just essentially at least understood that by looking at the diagrams. So even they don't belabor this too much. They don't go on and on and on about this. All right, so at the very beginning of this talk, lecture, I said that PDAs are the counterparts to context-free grammars, and that's actually true. A language is generated by a context-free grammar if and only if there is a PDA that accepts it. And we're going to do it by empty stack, and that's why we went to the trouble of playing around with the empty stack. The proofs are going to be much easier. The conversion is much easier. When we go from a context-free grammar to a PDA, we'll create a PDA by empty stack. And when we go from the PDA to the context-free grammar, which we're not going to do in great detail, it adds too many productions. We'll all still be reading these slides, and you'll still be listening to me in hours from now. So I'm going to talk about the method, but we're not going to do the details of that. All right. So they've got a nice diagram on here, very similar to what we saw with finite automata. If we have a context-free grammar, we're going to show that there's a PDA that will accept by empty stack. If you have a PDA that accepts by empty stack, we'll really hand wave over saying what the equivalent grammar is. And because we know empty stack and final state are equivalent, we've got the little back and forth arrows there, which means we can go from the first oval to the third oval and back. Right? All right. So let's look at a context-free grammar and convert it to a PDA. There's a lot of ways to do this. I'm going to do it the way that's right here in the slides. And we're going to do it with I believe we're going to do it with a single state. And let's see, I'm going to move along. Basically, we're going to simulate leftmost derivations with this single state PDA. So go to the middle of page 203 where they say, formally, let G be a grammar consisting of variables, terminals, productions, and a start symbol. We're going to define the related PDA as consisting of one state Q, the same terminal symbols. Our stack alphabet is going to consist of all of the terminals and variables, the terminals and non-terminals. Then we're going to define a transition function based on each production. Q, of course, is going to be the start symbol, and S is going to be on the stack when we start. Notice there's no QF. We don't need it. We're doing it by empty stack. All right. So this next line where it says where, okay, we get a transition delta Q epsilon A whenever, which goes to QB, beta, whenever we have a production A goes to beta. So let's look at it backwards. If you have a production A goes to beta, for every one of those, and remember how there can be more than one A productions, right? For every production A goes to beta, we're going to create a transition delta Q epsilon A, that's the thing on the left of the production, and that's going to go to the same state, and then we're going to write what's on the right of the production. And then we're going to add in a whole bunch of simple moves for all the terminals in the language. So if A is a terminal in our grammar, we're going to add the transition delta QAA goes to Q epsilon. And we'll do that for all the terminals. So usually at the end of your the transitions you're writing down, you'll have a whole sequence of these for all the terminals that are in the grammar. All right, now there's no example here. That is unfortunate. And it's hard for me to show you one without there being one. I think I'll create a tape that goes with the other slides. It has a really nice example. They're going on to prove that this method works. It does. It's very simple. You could read the proof, and you should be able to do an example. I'm really upset they don't have an example here. All right. I'm actually going all the way down to the other way. All right, where they go from PDAs to context-free grammars. Let me tell you how messy this is. We are going to create an incredible number of non-terminals and an incredible number of productions. Basically, we're going to take all the possible combinations of states with the stack symbols. So I'm going to have a Q0X, Q1, Q0Y, Q2, for all Q2, X, Q0, and so forth. Let's go down to where they actually have it. We're not going to do it. I'm just going to let you see it. Here it is, on page 210. They give you the PDA, and they say, define a grammar as follows. Now, here's all our variables. It's all the combinations PXQ, where P and Q are all combinations of states. So if PXQ is there, QXP is going to be there. And for all stack symbols. I mean, so just think, if you'd had two states and one stack symbol, one, two, well, you're not going to have too many there, but they certainly multiply. And then also S will be a variable of the grammar. Here's what the productions look like. There will be a production from S. It goes to basically, the combination S goes to Q0, Z0, P, okay, where P is any state in Q. Okay, now the Q0, Z0 probably makes a little sense because those are what you start out with in a computation. All right, then we're going to add in all these quirky productions. The combinations Q, X, R, K will go to a symbol in the alphabet, followed by the rest of these combinations of non-terminals. And we'll do that for every symbol A in the alphabet, including adding in epsilon. Ah. All right. Now, this is as far as we're going with this. I don't care whether they have an example or not. Even the simplest of PDAs has the most complicated of grammars. So they are. At least they take a very simple PDA. It only has two transitions. Let's see how long the grammar is. Without even doing it, let's take a look. Oops. I think, wait a minute. Okay, here we go. Oops, no, I did pass by. Maybe the grammar wasn't that long. I'm back on 211. Okay. All right, so let's see what the non-terminals, oh, there was only one state there, so QZQ and S are the variables, and then they've got the following productions. They only have two productions, so I lied. So I guess it can be fairly simple. I'll let you play with that. Then they're going to do another. All they have to do is just, okay, they've got six. On page 212, they have six transitions in their PDA. Let's take a look and see how many productions they ended up with. Okay, I see four, and four is 8, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 14 productions. You can play with that if you want to. On slide 215, they do go on and the languages of the two are equal when you convert. And again, I'm going to skip over the proof for this. There's some interesting stuff about deterministic PDAs that we kind of want to get to. So I am actually skipping to slide 220. Now remember, all the PDAs we've looked at so far, and the ones that are equivalent to context-free grammar, are non-deterministic PDAs. So, and we could pretty well see what the non-determinism was, just by our first example where we had to guess when to go to Q1. So a deterministic one, again, it's deterministic in a way that will make sense to us. It takes away the choice. It says that the transitions are of the following two forms. Either delta QAX is always empty or a singleton. Basically, they're saying there is at most one transition from a state on an input symbol with X on the top of the stack. Empty means that there was no transition. Now, if there is a transition, 2 tells us that there cannot be a transition that lets us ignore the input while popping X off the stack. And that makes sense because that's non-deterministic. You wouldn't know whether to ignore the input or not. So all the transitions will be of this form. All right, so then they go and they do an example. It's a nice, neat example. It's W followed by C followed by W reverse. You're probably saying, gee, I wonder why they didn't do W reverse. Well, it turns out there is no deterministic one for doing that. The proof of that is way beyond the scope of this course. But this will work nicely, and I'll let you read through that example. It's a real simple one. They give you the deterministic PDA, so you just have to follow through. Then on slide 221 at the top, they tell us that the regular languages are a proper subset of the deterministic PDAs, which are a proper subset of the context-free languages. Well, for one thing, we know the last two because I told you, palindromes are not regular. They're not accepted by a deterministic PDA, but they are a context-free language. They can be accepted by a non-deterministic one, and writing a grammar for them is pretty simple. That example we just saw a minute ago, WCW reverse, that's not regular. You can't do a finite automaton for that or a regular expression, but we did see a DPDA for that. So the inclusions there are proper inclusions. And I'm going to skip over their theorem that proves it, because we've got examples that show it very clearly, and we don't need to actually prove this. Then there's this question about ambiguous grammars here on slide 223. It turns out that ambiguous grammars do not have deterministic PDAs. On the other hand, we can't say the converse of this, and I think they'll go on to say that. So let's see. Oh yeah, right below this it says that the language WWverse does have a nice unambiguous grammar, but it doesn't have a deterministic one. Okay, so let's see what they say on slide 224. Okay, they're not going to say anything more about that. I'm going to let you think a little bit about where the ambiguity stuff falls in here. They're going to do properties of context-free grammars, but they're not saying much about them. In the next section, the next module, we're going to simplify context-free grammars. And guess what, folks? On slide 225, it tells us that we're going to have a pumping lemma for context-free languages. It's going to be covered. I'm going to give it to you. There'll be some reading on it, and there'll be a tape for it. It's not that hard. And we'll be looking at closure properties. Remember closure properties for regular languages? They were closed into union and intersection and complement and whole bunches of things. Well, some of those will carry over to context-free languages, but context-free languages aren't going to be closed under all of them. And remember the decision properties? We could test a string for membership. We could see if a regular language was empty and stuff like that. And we're going to be able to do that for context-free languages, too. I'm not going to talk about the equivalence there. All right, so this is as far as we're going to go in this lecture. We'll come back and look at Chomsky normal form and stuff in the next module.